Thanks for tuning in to the MyCom podcast. This is a show designed to help churches communicate with excellence, both inside your church walls and outside in a community in the world. I'm John Watson, and this is our search engine master, Darby Jones.
Ad-ho.
So today, we are talking about search engine optimization, or SEO, as you probably have heard it referenced. This is basically the way that your website gets listed on a Google search page or a Bing search page or whatever other search engines people use. Does anyone still use Yahoo?
I don't. I don't either. Excommunicated it from my computer.
Well, anyway, Google is definitely the biggest player here. Bing, it has its own following. Basically, the rules apply to both. So we're going to talk about Google predominantly. That doesn't mean that we're excluding Bing. It's just kind of the standard way of talking about it in the industry. But SEO really matters. I mean, this is the way where, you know, somebody moves to your town and they sit down at their computer, which, by the way, is pretty much the most common way that now that people find a new church in a new town. You open up Google and you say, you know, United Methodist Church in Indianapolis, Indiana, right? And if you are a United Methodist Church in Indianapolis, Indiana, you want to show up on that page. That's a relevant search result, right? SEO is the way that you make sure that that happens. So that's what we're going over today. So consider this your primer, your introduction, SEO 101 for church websites and blogs. We're going to organize around two sorts of websites. The first, we're going to talk about informational sites. This is, you've got a church, you've got a website that lists out, you know, who's on staff, what you believe, and when your service times are. That's what I'm calling an informational website. The second style is a content-driven website. That's an informational website with a blog, essentially. So if your pastor is blogging once a week or once a month or whatever, then you've got some specific SEO tips that we're going to talk about for the blog content. Now, SEO, I think of it this way. There's a lot of rules. There's a lot of best practices to follow. I think of it as the German idea of Gestalt, that the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. I think it's a psychiatric idea or a philosophical idea originally, but the point is that the algorithms Google uses to determine page rankings are incredibly complex. And any one of these things that we're going to be talking about, whether it's how to format a link, how to use keywords properly, on its own, it's not going to have a massive impact on your ranking. But when you combine all of these best practices, it's going to make a really big splash. It really does matter. So, this is SEO Gestalt. Maybe I should have titled that the name of the podcast.
We can.
You're right. We can do what we want. Oh, this is wonderful. All right. Welcome to SEO Gestalt. All right. So let's start talking about informational websites a little bit. I think the kind of first place to start is page titles. You've got to name each page of your website something. So the information I have to impart to you is that that actually matters. If you name your page something that's, you know, 480 characters long, you will actually be penalized by Google. The search engines are not going to like ranking that because that's not what people want to see. That's hard to read. It's not very useful in a search engine results page or SERP, SERP. I don't know if people actually call it SERP, but I might call it SERP. Moving on. So the ideal character length of a title is going to be somewhere around 50 or 60 characters long. Now, that's a rule of thumb. It can be 30, it can be 70. But if you aim for about 50 or 60, it's probably a safe bet.
Maybe SEO Gestalt isn't the greatest title for... I don't think we're hitting that 50 character threshold.
Oh, man.
We'll have to brainstorm on that.
That's why you got to have a marketing team. If it's all on you, you're not going to do as good of a job as if you've got a couple guys. You're right. So 50 and 60 characters long for your title lengths. As an example, I don't have a character counter in front of me, but if you've got a page that lists out your worship services, calling it services probably isn't the best SEO practice here. Now, if you called it worship services in Indianapolis, that's a really relevant SEO term. And we'll talk a little bit more about location in a minute.
Or contemporary worship services get a little more specific. Yes. In Springfield, whatever.
Absolutely.
It is pretty important because if you go over 60 characters, Google's going to cut off part of the title. And a lot of times people pay attention to the beginning of a title and the end of a title. Those are like the two most important parts. So you don't want anything cut off, and you don't want it to be too short, or else you might dupe people into going to your website. They see a key phrase that they like and they click over, but then they realize it's not what they thought it was going to be. But if your title is between 50 and 60 characters, that's sort of...
You're setting an expectation that is fulfilled when they find out. They're not missing a key aspect of the title that maybe you put on the end of a 140 character title.
Right. It's the perfect length. It's just enough information to tell them what they need to know.
And there was a really interesting meme going around a few years ago on the social media platforms of the day that had an article where every word, the first and last letter of that word were intact, and every letter in between, in the middle of the word, was jumbled. And it was actually perfectly legible. If you looked at one word at a time, it was very confusing. But when you just read it, you could actually make sense of this kind of garbled thing. And that just illustrates the point that what's at the beginning and what's at the end is what we are psychologically primed to look at. It's how we bookend our words, our phrases, our sentences, etc. So it really does matter. I'm glad you brought that up. One of the other biggest things, and this might have the most impact, second most impact on SEO, as far as I can tell, it's mobile responsiveness. I don't think I need to tell you the number of people using their phones to consume content on the internet and to look up information is just skyrocketing exponentially on a daily basis. Mobile is where the internet is going. So your website needs to be mobile ready. The word we use is mobile responsive. And what that means is you can actually demonstrate this in your browser by going to a website and making sure your browser isn't full screen. Grab the corner of your browser window and drag it to a smaller width. And most websites that are mobile responsive will actually treat it like a phone screen and shrink it down to a different dimension. So the layout of the page is going to change. Emails are also this way, right? Because somebody might be reading email on an iPad. Somebody might be reading email on an Android phone. The screen widths are different. Good mobile responsive coding will allow for different widths and organize the data still in a helpful way on your site. Moz.com has a good article on this, but a little quote that I want to read. It says, "Google is steadily moving to a mobile-only world. Mobile-first indexing seems like the inevitable consequence of a year or more almost exclusively dedicated to evangelizing and forcing a change of mindset from desktop to mobile." So, did you catch that? That Google's evangelizing and forcing a change of mindset from desktop to mobile. They are not alone in this. The internet is pushing you to consume things in a mobile way. Your website needs to be mobily responsive, clean, legible, pleasant to consume on a phone. So keep, this is really important, keep the mobile and desktop content the same. When mobile responsive first became an issue, a lot of websites would have different sites for the desktop and the mobile devices. So what that ended up being was you might get different articles showing up. You might get a different homepage on a phone than on a desktop. They've got to be the same. It needs to be the same website, just shifted to fit on a mobile screen. Not shrunk, but the elements moved around appropriately. So, I mean, the biggest takeaway here is if your website is not mobile responsive, and pull it up on your phone right now and check, make sure it works, make sure it's not broken. If it's not responsive, you need to do whatever it takes to become mobile responsive and to do it well. Also, some places will advocate you doing an m.mobile site, by which I mean, if your URL is firstumc.com, the mobile site might be m.firstumc.com. Don't do that. It's a bad idea, and here's why. Link building strategies matter, by which I mean having other websites link to your content on your website matters for your SEO ranking. And if you have an m.mobile site, you have to have two link building strategies. You're going to be duplicating work. It's just messy. It's not worth it. It's not the way people do it anymore. It's kind of an outdated thing, so avoid m.mobile sites.
Another important aspect of SEO is anchor text.
Right.
That's the text in your links. And so one thing that we need to get away from is click here.
Oh, please.
That,
yes.
That tells Google nothing about your site. You need to be very explicit and clear about what you're taking people to. Plus, when somebody's reading an article and they're basically just glancing at the article to see interesting topics, if they see click here, that tells them nothing.
And it's in blue, so your eye is drawn to
it. It's naturally drawn right there. But if they see amazing SEO tips for churches, they're going to click on that, right, and they're going to read that article. So it's really an art coming up with the anchor text. You want to be as concise as you can while explaining as much about the link you're taking them to as you can. So get away from click here. Be short and concise, but also very direct and clear.
Right. So an example might be, if you are writing a blog on your website and it's 10 ways to get involved in your local community, don't write in the blog, in the blog that points to that. Don't say in the content, to find out ways to get involved in your community, click here. Rather, say, here are 10 great ways to get involved in your community, and link the text, get involved in your community. You see the difference there? One, if you're scanning the page, like Darby just said, you see click here and it tells you nothing. The second, if you're scanning the page, you see get involved in your community and you think, that's something that I want. And it makes you click that, compels you to do that.
Another thing, whatever page you're linking to, it's a good idea to use keywords from that page's title in your anchor text.
Yes.
And Google will reward you because they see the keywords you're using matches keywords that are in that article. And it's just a good practice.
Absolutely. And I'm glad you brought up keywords, because when people think of SEO, generally the word keywords is what they're thinking of, which ironically or coincidentally is kind of a keyword, right, for writing SEO content. So what is a keyword? A keyword is the word that makes the most sense that people will likely be searching to find the topic that you're trying to talk about or the idea that you are communicating in your content or on your site. So for our podcast, if we blogged about it, the keywords would be church communications, church marketing. Those would be the two biggest keywords or keyword phrases. So you want to make sure that you're using keywords in the page names of your website, in those 50 to 60 character page names we talked about, and the titles of pages, the headlines, the biggest text on your pages should be keywords, and also in the content of the page that you talk about.
Subheadlines.
Subheadlines are huge. Absolutely.
The URL of the article,
mm-hmm,
should be in there.
Yeah, the slug. So if you're firstumc.com, it's firstumc.com/the name of your blog. That part after the forward slash. And by the way, that is a forward slash, not a backslash. Just cut that common misconception right there. Nip that in the bud. That slug is everything after the forward slash. And it actually really matters for SEO, for your rankings. So yeah, make sure your keywords are in that slug. And if you're using a content management system like WordPress, you can customize the slug and even make it different from the title of your article. And if it stays within the same kind of world, if it's not drastically different topics, you're not going to get penalized for that, and it can actually help you. So one other thing to note about, two things to note about keywords, actually. First of all, the relevance of local search in a mobile world is extremely high. Local personalized search results are just the latest, greatest thing that's continuing to grow. So the idea is, when you're on your phone, you're often out and about. When you're out and about and you're on your phone, you're looking for things. You're looking for, I want a really good burger joint downtown, and I'm going to look for it on my phone. Google got smart about that some time back and began displaying search results local to your area. Even if you don't search for, I live in Nashville, so I might look for great burger joints. It's going to know I'm talking about Nashville and is going to give back to me relevant local personalized search results. What that means is you consider the name of your town a keyword. Don't put it in everything. And we'll talk a little bit more about application of that later. But that's going to be a really useful tool for you. So for example, if you're in Nashville and you've got an Easter service and you want to talk about it on a page of your website or in a blog, don't title it Easter service. Title it First UMC's Easter Service in Nashville, right?
And another good one is children's activities. We've talked about this before. People are searching children's activities in a new community that they go to, and you need to title your page children's activities or first UMC children's activities in Springfield, Ohio. And that will get you on the map in Google.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You have to ask yourself a few questions. You know, is the keyword relevant to your website content? Will searchers find what they're looking for on your site when they search using those keywords? And will they be happy with what they find?
Absolutely. That is such a good rubric to apply to your content, your titles, everywhere that keywords apply. You know, years ago, when the way that Google used keywords or rewarded or punished the use of keywords became more popular to talk about, when SEO was kind of a new on the block idea, the idea was that Google would send out these little bots to crawl over the internet and discover all of these things and then bring back results based on keywords and display them on the search engine result pages. Well, what happened was, if your keyword was burger, I don't know why I'm hungry, so I think that's why I'm using burger as an example all the time. Burger sounds great. If your keyword is burger, this is what people would end up doing. The best burgers, if you want to eat a burger in the city with the best burgers, which is Nashville, where you want to get a burger. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? They would oversaturate in a really unhelpful, really clunky, illegible way. They would oversaturate their titles and their content with keywords. Google noticed this. Google fixed this. So please don't do this. Google now uses latent semantic indexing in their algorithms. What latent semantic indexing means essentially is that organic synonyms matter. That means that you don't write your keywords, you don't write your content and your titles with keywords for these crawlers, these bots from Google. You write them for humans. You write them for your audience. And what that means is, if I'm looking for a burger joint, I might also say American food. Those are synonymous ideas in a sense. They're related. I think metonymous might even be the right word for that. Google is actually going to reward your use of multiple words and phrases that mean the same thing, because that's how humans communicate. They got eerily good at this. It's just crazy. So please don't be clunky with how you use your keywords. Feel free to use synonyms in an organic, natural way that really hits your audience home. If you focus on your audience, Google will reward you. It's just going to work out really well for you.
So you could do children's activities or fun for kids,
yes,
or
exactly,
all these phrases that relate to the same thing. You don't have to fill your article up with the same keyword.
Precisely. Yeah. I think that's the best thing Google did for content in the recent years. I mean, it made things so much easier to read and just more of a pleasure. A couple other quick things. There are two terms that you might run across, TLD and SLD, and I just want to explain them. TLD is a top-level domain. What that means is, if your first UMC, that's firstumc.org, .com, or .net. Now, there are all these other ones. You could be firstumc.coffee or .group or whatever. There's a whole bunch of these out there now. They matter. And SEO is all about building trust with Google, right? That's kind of the point, is Google wants to trust that you are real, that you are an expert in your field, that you have quality content, et cetera. Well, Google trusts .org, .com, and .net more than it trusts other TLDs.
.me.
.me, .info, .biz. If you have the option to choose, right, if you just have to have a domain name and the only way you can get it is being a .info and that makes sense for what you're doing, okay, it's not going to kill you. It's not going to drive a stake into the heart of your business here. But if you're a church, I don't see a reason why you shouldn't use .com or .org. .net probably doesn't make as much sense for you. But my point is, TLD, top-level domains, they matter. So when you're purchasing your domain name, try real hard to get a .com. And there is a trend. It's changing. And in 5 years, I might be singing a different song. But we're not there yet. So if that's the case, go, you know, in 5 years, go spend $12 and buy a new domain name. SLD is a second-level domain, and that's the first part. So if you're firstumc.org, that's the first UMC is the SLD. And honestly, it doesn't matter as much. Where it matters is fulfilling expectations of your readers, right? So if you see a search result for best burger joint in Nashville And the second level domain is padthai.com. I'm confused, right? As a reader, Google hasn't punished you, but the reader will punish you, because punish might be a weird way to say that. But what I mean is you're not going to get the click-throughs that you want because you're not meeting the expectations that you're putting forth. So pay attention to second level domain and top level domain. So that's kind of the best practices for an informational website. I think we fudged and talked a little bit about content as well there. For a content-driven website, it's all of the above, plus a few specific things. First of all, you know, we mentioned a link-building strategy before. Links used to be a really big deal in SEO. Backlinking to other websites was just, you used to read a blog and down at the bottom, they'd have 150 links just for the sake of getting backlinks to their site. And Google's smart. They wisened up. That's not okay now. What you need is quality links that make sense.
People actually have to be clicking on those links. So I'll put plenty of links in our articles, but they're very contextual in the article. They make sense to the reader.
Yeah.
And people actually click on them.
Right. And some people even sell links in their content. And, you know, if they talk about, they're talking about how to write a good sermon, and they might sell a link to a software for pastors and put a link in a weird place. That's like an affiliate link. Don't do that. I mean, there's a place for that. That does happen, but you have to have a system in place of saying that that's a sponsored link and everything. I don't think that's a relevant scenario for churches anyway. But my point is to emphasize what Darby just said, that you're right, man. Like, it's got to make sense to your reader. So again, we just keep going back to talk in a way that's naturally helpful to your audience, and things are going to go really well for you here. Something interesting about the way that links work is if you get a link from Forbes.com to your website, it's going to be a lot more weighty for SEO purposes than if you get a link from, you know, some tiny local website or a tiny blog or something like that. So the more that Google trusts the person linking to you, the more weight or value is given to the link that's coming to you.
This is one of the great link building strategies, is to get quality links from other sites that are doing SEO great and have a ton of engagement. So getting in touch with your local newspaper, their website, getting in touch with us. You know, if you have an amazing ministry and you want to share it with the world, get in touch with us. And umc.org might feature it on the website, and that will be very good for Google.
Yeah, that's right.
And if you want to contribute in a way on MyCom or for United Methodist Communications website, get in touch with us at podcast@umcom.org. We'll get in touch. We'll get you in touch with the right people.
Yeah.
And we can include in the description how you can get in touch with the various different departments as well.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great point. You know, UMC does it right. UMC pays attention. UMC.org pays attention to SEO, and we've got quality content, and we've got a large base of readers. Google trusts us. And so that's a prime example and a really relevant one for you United Methodist churches out there. And look, I mean, if you're not UMC, that's okay, but you need to be thinking in this context of who is relevant to my industry or to what I'm trying to say to my community. Right? It might even be a local newspaper for you. You know, if you do some community drive, your local Herald or something might want to feature an article. You can write an article pitch to them and they'll put that article online and link straight to your website. That's going to be really good for you. And the nice thing is that doesn't go away, which is a great segue, if I may say so myself, to content age. Age really matters here. What I don't mean is to despair if your website is new. I mean it as an encouragement of when you put up a blog, you put up good content, it's not like it goes away unless you delete it or unpublish it. So the more great content you have, the more you build your blog, it's going to exponentially help you in the world of SEO, right? Because if you post once a month, after a year, you've got a lot more opportunity than you did at the beginning of the year to draw people in through SERPs.
And it's not just that you have great content, but that's obviously huge. But if you have great content that's evergreen, that is appropriate any time of the year for years to come, you'll get rewarded even more. So we have an article, I think it's called Fun Party Jokes for Team Building.
Right.
Or Fun Party Games for Team Building. And that gets more and more traffic every month than it did from the month before.
It's amazing.
And it'll be there forever, and it'll continually drive traffic to our site.
But something to note is it'll be there forever driving traffic to the site unless you go back and change the name of the title, or unless you go back and change the slug. That one's kind of a big one. Leave the slug alone once you've set it. If you make a lot of edits to the title, the page name, the slug, you can really actually negatively impact the benefit of the age of your content.
But on the flip side, the things that you can change to that article are, let's say, adding a prominent call out to subscribe to one of your newsletters.
Right.
I mean, you really need to look at the articles that are doing great on your website and do that. You know, if you're getting a ton of traffic to this one landing page, go back and feature your Christmas service for a few months and then change it later.
Right.
There's so many possibilities that you could do to really benefit from that.
Yeah, that's spot on. I think a good rule of thumb would be feel free to add things that add value to your reader, but don't take away things that are working. So yeah, great rule of thumb to go on. Two other points to mention about content. First of all, quality will always beat quantity. Do not feel like you need to blog once a week if you don't have anything to say. Now, if you've got something really important to say, but you can only get to it about once every month, that's going to be better than a bunch of empty content going out there in the world. So that actually, I mean, as someone who's done a lot of blogging for different companies and on my own, that has alleviated a lot of pressure for me, where I put it on my own, you know, I put an expectation on myself, all right, John, you've got to blog every week, and eventually ended up blogging about how I don't have anything to blog about. And that's just not good content. So quality owns quantity. And here's a little sidebar, a trend alert. Videos are going to become more and more relevant to your rankings as YouTube's fighting to stay ahead of the game with Facebook and other video-centric giants. Google is rewarding you for putting good, relevant video content on your blog. So just keep that in mind, that it looks like that trend is just going up and up. So it's only going to get more helpful in the future. So if video is a part of your marketing communications plan at all, make sure you're implementing it on your website and not just social media.
And I just want to say one thing about YouTube videos that I discovered recently. It's getting so much easier to make video today. The tools, a lot of them are free. iMovies, it's like cut and paste. It's like kindergarten. You know, you put these videos together so easily. And YouTube has this feature that gets rid of shakiness in your video.
No way.
So, you know, if you're recording on your phone and you're a little shaky, it's okay. They've got a tool that takes away that shakiness. And I looked at one of my videos recently, and it was like a feature film. It looked like, you know, I had a Steadicam or something, and I was just running around videotaping my kids on a zipline. And it was really shaky when I got the initial footage, but YouTube took it all out, and it was all smooth and connected. So don't be afraid of video. It's going to help your SEO. Yeah. There's so many tools that you can tap into.
Seriously, if you've got a cell phone, like a smartphone, you should be doing video. Feel free to not have it be a video production with makeup and costumes and stuff. If your pastor's got something important to say, get your phone out, put it in portrait mode, for crying out loud, and take a little video of him. That's such a great personal way to connect with people. And it's really good for SEO, and that's going to live on your website and help visitors build trust with you as they see you and establish a personal connection. And it's going to help Google build trust with you as they reward people for putting relevant videos on their site.
And sometimes the more campy or low-key your video is, the more authentic people think authentic. It is. But
I'd say it's a buzzword, but buzzword is a buzzword.
Yeah.
Now I'm just confused.
Yeah. I don't like to use the word authentic, but when I do... Yeah. It's about church video marketing.
I sense some real synergy happening here. Anyway, let's stay agile.
Anyways, another important thing about the content is your length.
Oh, yeah.
And it doesn't matter, actually. I know that sounds contradictory, but you one of the old best practices was that it had to be short and concise, and you had this whole wave of people making these listicles, these articles with a bunch of lists, and there's a lot of clickbait, and it was a trend for a long time.
Top 10 ways to make a great podcast. Number 6 is going to blow your mind.
But people are kind of going the opposite way, and they're starting to consume more long-form content now because they're tired of these listicles.
Right.
They want quality content. And as long as your content's good, you can write 5,000 words.
It's true.
But it has to keep people's attention. You know, if you write an article with 10 steps and people browse through it in 10 seconds and they're like, oh, some good ideas, but then they bounce out, Google might punish you because they only spent 10 seconds looking at your
sub-headlines.
They're actually
looking at your bounce rates there.
Yeah. And so feel free to write lists, but don't be afraid to write some quality content and some length behind it. But it just has to be good. It has to keep people engaged.
Right. So Google doesn't technically in their algorithm look at length. They're not saying if it's, you know, above 500 words but below 1,200 words, then that's the sweet spot. What Google looks for is really good content. But Google and marketing experts in general have noticed a correlation between length and quality. Because generally, it's hard to kind of fudge your way through a 3,000-word article if you don't actually really know what you're talking about. So, yeah, I agree completely. Don't be afraid of long form. In fact, embrace long form content. Or embrace short, pithy content as long as it fits the quality of the message that you're trying to convey.
Yeah, so get rid of the fluff, be concise, but you can still have long form content and be concise.
Yeah, absolutely, don't ramble. Another thing that is kind of one of those doesn't matter, yes and no sort of things, meta descriptions. If you've been around the website world for any length of time, you'll know a few years ago, meta descriptions were a really big deal. It's how you populated what shows up in social media. It's how you populate what shows up below your page headline in a Google search result or a Bing search result. It does not directly affect your ranking on the SERP. So Google's algorithm doesn't say, do they have a meta description? Yes or no. And here, you know, here's 10 points positive if they do and 10 points negative if they don't. That's not a scenario that's happening. But here's the thing. A good, relevant meta description will help people want to click on the search result that points to you. And Google does reward you for getting more click-throughs. So the higher your click-through rate, the more you're going to show up in the rankings. So yeah, meta descriptions actually kind of do matter. And I'll qualify that by saying Google will automatically populate that for you. So don't panic if you can't get to it or if you've got a bunch of older content without a meta description. That's okay. It's not the end of the world. Google's really good at what they do. They're actually going to go and highlight the search terms in your content and pull out maybe 150, 200 characters or so on either side of that word. And so they're still going to help the reader. But if you can write a meta description that's better than what Google can do, if it's really inviting to the reader to click to find out exactly what they're looking for, by all means, please do that.
And a lot of content management systems will use the preview field to populate that meta description.
Right. So
just be aware that the preview field is going to put those previews in various parts of your website, and many CMSs are smart enough to connect the preview field with the meta description.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we've gone over quite a few different things, and honestly, this is just the tip of the iceberg, but it's going to be a really, really good starting place for you if you manage or have anything to do with a church website or a church blog. So I hope it's been helpful. Let me read this little quote from a Forbes article that was helpful for me. I think it's really true. The truth? Most people look at SEO the wrong way. They look at ways to do the least amount of work for the greatest initial return, when in fact, it's quite the opposite. Obviously, SEO is one of the best web skills that you can possibly learn, but in order to succeed with it, you need to do the most amount of work for the least initial return. It's a slow, steady, and painful process, but that's also the nature of the beast. Okay, I think they're being a little melodramatic, right? It's not painful, but the point is well received. You're going to optimize your website for SEO, and you're not going to see any change for a little while. But if you keep doing these best practices, I promise you it's going to make a difference in the long run. This is a long game, but we're patient people. We want to play the long game. Well, that's it for today's MyCom podcast, an SEO primer for church websites and blogs. We really hope you found it helpful. If you've got any tips on SEO or blogging for a church website, we'd honestly love to hear them and share them with our listeners. So feel free to shoot an email to us, podcast@umcom.org, and we'll get right back to you. See you next time.